documenting the crisis of our republic, waging war on the new world order. This is Govern America. Govern America.
We're just south of the Great Lakes capital city, covering all of North America via satellite, terrestrial radio stations all across the country, streaming live from FEMA Region 5 and Michigan COG Region 9. This is Govern America. I'm Darren Weeks. Yeah, we're here. I'm reminded of the Postal Service's, motto. I guess it's not the official motto of the Postal Service, but what they say about it anyway. Neither snow, nor rain, nor heat, nor gloom of night. Yeah, how about severe weather and phone communications problems on the phone line? And here's the thing, ladies and gentlemen. It just feels like more and more that America is becoming a third world country as far as infrastructure is concerned. And certainly communications infrastructure is no exception to that rule. I want to say right now, I don't even know if we're on the air. I don't know how long we're going to be on the air. I had a significant amount of trouble connecting today. I believe we're still up, but we could go down at any time. Yesterday, I had tested out a backup system to stream over the cell towers, which worked just absolutely wonderfully, despite the fact that we have a very limited signal out here from cell towers. The nearest cell tower is about 5 miles from where I'm at right now. Problem is that we have trees with leaves on them, and we have a significant hill down at the end of the road, which I think is blocking things. But I managed to get a signal out of here and keep it up yesterday, only to find out, though, that today we had a big rainstorm. So it's, pouring rain out there right now. And, the high-frequency gigahertz signal is subject to rain fade. So I'm sure that that's what's going on right now. My backup system is being rained out. And, all this started really a couple of weeks ago when we had storms move in. And I thought that we were going to have things would actually clean up a little bit on their own. Well, about Tuesday of this week, we still had significant noise on the line, so I gave them a call, the phone company, and as much as I would love to be able to blame the foreigners on the phone, this woman very much sounded like she was an American, and I'm listening, I'm talking to her, and she keeps asking me questions like, do you have another jack you can plug your phone into? And I said, no, you don't understand. This happened. This all started when the storms moved into the area. And so she puts me on hold for about 10 minutes, comes back, and then hits me with another question. She says, do you have a different phone that you could plug in? The first thing she asked me was, do you have a filter on your line? And I said, yes, we have DSL service here. And so we have to have a filter to filter the high frequency from the low frequency so that the data can travel through without interrupting the voice. And so she's talking about different jacks, different phones. I says, look, you don't understand, and I tell her over and over and over again, the way it is, all of this started when the storms moved in. Nothing's changed here. We've been doing the same thing we've been doing all along. The problem started with the storms. And she still didn't get it. In fact, I even told her, my father-in-law lives just in the neighborhood, a couple of houses away. And he's having the same problem. This is an aerial problem, which was caused by weather. And I told her. She kept putting me on hold. Finally, she came back and she says, well, I don't really have anything to do to tell you as far as troubleshooting procedures. I says, I don't. I says, so what you're telling me here is that there's nothing you can do to help me. I mean, I'm just basically, that's it. Yeah, I mean, there's nothing I can do. I'm just kind of screwed, huh? And ladies and gentlemen, I'm floored at how lack of trained, you know, how things just continue to deteriorate. Customer service is crap today. Nope, you know, they're very efficient at taking your money. They just don't seem to be very efficient at keeping the essential services up and running. It's just remarkable. So, I don't know if we're on the air. I don't know if we even have any listeners hanging around since we came on the air 15 minutes late. But we're here, at least I'm here for now, maybe. I wanted to talk about some of the stuff that's been happening on the Democratic National Convention. Normally, I don't talk about conventions because, frankly, I think elections are a waste of time. They're rigged. All your candidates are given to you. I did happen to catch some of Donald Trump's speech at the Republican National Convention, and I got to say, it was a very, very good speech. I don't know what it is about Donald Trump. You know, is it just me, or does it look like, I mean, when you look at the expression on his face, it looks like he's in pain. You know, I told my wife, what is it about Donald Trump that every time he talks, you think he's constipated? But anyway, he's up there speaking, and he sounds great. You know, he's making good points. And if he kept a quarter of his word on the things he wants to do, then he might be a good candidate. It's just, I don't trust any of these characters. But then you flip over and look at the other side and see what Hillary, and you know what you're going to get. She's the Antichrist. She's a blatant criminal. We know, going back to the Clinton years, they were criminals back then. So what does that tell us about our so-called elected officials? This is the best that America can do? This is the best you can do? We've got a vast country here. We've got a lot of people in this country who are very brilliant. And out of all the brilliant minds in this country, this is it, huh? This is the best you can do. But I just get the sense that what we have going on here with this so-called election, every 4 years is the mob. Well, 2 years, really, because honestly, it's the presidential election isn't all there is, ladies and gentlemen. We've talked before about how a good majority of the seats in Congress are vacated this time around, and yet the media never even talks about that. Nobody talks about that. It's just all about which king or queen we're going to have. Why is that? Why doesn't anybody pay attention to the congressional seats that are being vacated, which arguably are just as important, if not more important, than the presidential election? Anyway, it's the reason why I'm talking about the Democratic convention this time around is because I think it illustrates perfectly just how rigged the system really is. You've got people, a candidate here in Hillary Clinton that nobody wants. She's an establishment candidate, and everybody sees what a scumbag criminal she is. The only people that really want it are shallow women. Women that are so shallow that, hey, she's a woman, so I'm going to vote for her. The smart women see through it, or people that are so afraid of Donald Trump or have been so angry at Donald Trump that for one reason or another, some of the comments he's made, they might be against him. But that's a poor reason to vote for somebody else. How about you just not vote at all? I don't know. This is very, very... But, you know, who does want Hillary Clinton? There are people that do. There are people that do want her. You know who it is? It's the media.
Right here in the city of brotherly love, you're looking at history.
Madam Chair, I move that Hillary Clinton be selected as the nominee of the Democratic Party.
Now, this is a montage, by the way. I should have set this up better. This is a montage of the media just going ballistic, just, you know, absolutely, you know, having a field day over this, the fact that, history's in the making, and, isn't that wonderful, and,
The political glass ceiling shattered.
Tonight from Philadelphia, history in the birthplace of American democracy. Hillary Clinton shatters a barrier, becoming the first woman to win the nomination of a major U.S. party.
Happy tears in the room for Hillary Clinton, and I mean a lot of tears. One man, a delegate from South Carolina, told me that he went into the ugly cry, which means sobbing uncontrollably.
Sobbing uncontrollably, ladies and gentlemen. Can you believe this? This is just incredible. But this is the media. This is how they roll. The reality of it is, though, is people did not want her. Now, who they did want was probably would be just as bad, because he's, you know, Bernie Sanders. There's this perception that this commie Bernie Sanders, and that's my opinion, based upon what he said. He's a democratic socialist, which is their buzzword for communists. But anyway, he's the candidate that they want, because somehow it's perceived that he understands the corruption of Wall Street. Now, never mind the fact that he probably wants to end the free market system altogether, such as it is. I mean, not that we really have a free market system, but we can talk about that another day. The point is that you have all this going on. And Hillary's up speaking. Now, there were other people that were, all the Bernie delegates in the room were booing every single time Hillary Clinton's name was mentioned, ladies and gentlemen. There were audible boos the first night of the convention. Every single time Hillary Clinton's name was mentioned. Again, here you have the establishment pushing a candidate that nobody wants. They don't want her, yet the establishment is going to shove her down your throat anyway. Hey, we live in a democracy, ladies and gentlemen. That's what they tell us. Of course, it wasn't founded as a democracy. It was a representative republic based upon the Constitution. But let's never let facts get in the way of a good story or a good meme, huh? I'll tell you what, I'm going to take the bottom of the hour break here. And we're going to see if we're still on the air when we come back. This is Govern America, or if we're still on the air now, for that matter. Stay with us. Please don't go away. All right, we're back. This is Govern America. I'm Darren Weeks. We're in for a ride here. This is going to be a long show. Actually, it may not be that long at all. I may end up cutting it short because we can't stay on the air here. Anyway, continuing on here, by the way, the website is governamerica.com. That's governamerica.com. My email address is radio@governamerica.com. If we can hopefully get things fixed by next week, hopefully we'll have a good show. But see, this is the thing. I'd like to book some guests, but with infrastructure problems, all these things have to be ironed out first. If there's one good thing about this, is at least we didn't have a guest scheduled, so we don't have to suffer the embarrassment of that. Before the break, we were talking about the Democratic National Convention, how the media is just going nuts. Hey, it's Hillary and woohoo, you know, but nobody wants her. Even her own party doesn't want her, save a few shallow people who, this is a historic moment. Isn't it great? A woman, no matter how corrupt she is, no matter how she's going to really screw us. Hey, but that's good. She's a woman. So let's have a woman. You know, I mean, with this ideology, I mean, why don't we just elect, you know, why don't we just have some kind of a hairy ape? Well, that would be historic, wouldn't it? I mean, anything could be better than her. I mean, I don't understand how stupid people are. It blows me away. Anyway, but some people understand. Some people are not that stupid. They're there at the convention, and they don't want her. And as she's speaking, you can, despite their best efforts to keep the Bernie people out, These people, some of them were still there, and you can still audibly hear them chanting, "Bernie, Bernie." Listen to her speech, and you can hear it if you listen carefully.
I went to 112 countries. When people hear those words, they hear America.
Okay, so anyway, if you listen closely, you could hear that in the background, and she's having a talk over them as they're heckling her. It's just, the whole thing was just it really delicious, the way it was coming apart at the seams. And the thing is other people, what they ended up doing to try to chant out, you know, because you heard what sounds like crowd noise. Well, what they did is they actually, in true Orwellian fashion, installed white noise machines inside the stadium, inside the convention hall, to try to drown out the chants. And the way we know that is it was reported earlier on, and then some people actually inside the convention, some of the delegates came out and actually confirmed this. There were a couple of things going on. They blocked the seats for the delegates for Bernie Sanders. And again, folks, I want to make it clear, I'm no fan of Bernie Sanders. I think the guy's a communist. That's my opinion. Based upon his own, you know, he's a democratic socialist. What's a socialist? It's communist light. Okay? And democratic socialist, we found out years ago, was there the Democrats' buzz term, the communist buzz term for what is a communist inside the United States. They can't come out and tell you that they're, you know, openly communist, although I'm not so sure today. With some of these people coming up, I could see them saying, hey, let's give communism a try. You know, with all the corruption on Wall Street and everything, I could see that, you know, so-called capitalism has been villainized enough that I could see them coming out and saying, let's give communism a try. I mean, people have become that stupid. That stupid. They don't have the historical compass. They don't have the gauge by which they can measure what's happened in the past, the outcomes-based education programs, affective education that's been in our schools for so many years, have dumbed down the population, dumbed down the public. All that matters is feel-good education. Hey, you know, make sure you feel good about yourself. It's okay if you get answers wrong. No problem. No problem. You don't have to get facts, figures, historical dates. You don't even have to have a grasp on anything. We won't even keep score when you play a game. You know, when you're in sports, because we don't want you to feel bad about yourself. Hey, it's okay if you're a loser. That's fine. Be a loser. Just don't feel bad about yourself. So these kind of programs being in the schools for over a half a century, and this is what you have. A population that has no idea that what it means to be a good candidate. They have no idea. They have no critical thinking skills unless it bites them in the hind end. And unfortunately, they don't have any empathy for anybody else either. I want mine, 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 mine. Bunch of spoiled little brats. You can tell I'm in a bad mood today. But watching this, seeing the people, you know, one thing that's a good thing is that I see people waking up. Even these people, these delegates, the people that are attending this convention, are starting to find out just how rigged the system really is. And for that reason, this is a good thing. And I just couldn't help but chuckle as I listened. Well, let's listen to this woman.
Hey guys, this is Eden here. I finally got into the convention. We're in the California section. Apparently, they've been letting everybody, all the other states in, and then they weren't letting in the California station. I'm going to turn around and let you see what it looked like when I got in. But when I got in, all these people were here, and they have already blocked off all of these sections where the Bernie Sanders supporters have been sitting, putting reserve signs on all of these seats where we can't sit. And if you look up here at this gray box, that is a white noise machine used to block out our chants and cheers. So share this video. The California Bernie Sanders delegates have been held outside their entrance for longer than every other state. And they've blocked off all of the seats with reserve signs for seat fillers or scabs, and they have placed a white noise machine above our section. Yes, Susan, seat fillers. They're paying people $50 a day to wear Hillary shirts and hold signs and come in here and sit down, so there's no room for elected delegates. I have the California Democrats list of official elected delegates, and Hillary and Bernie Sanders people with the names on them, and I can tell you that this section has not been full. This section has not been full every day, and we come in and now they've blocked off all the main seats, and the Hillary people were standing outside. They were saying, what's the plan? What are the instructions? And they were saying the instructions are to save 10 seats. So they've already instructed the Hillary delegates in California when they get here to block off 10 seats. These are all the people who were in here when I just walked in, when I was told that seating hadn't begun yet. He's pulling off the reserve signs. Guys, please share this video. Please share this video under a public status.
Right here. Nobody sit right here. This is they reserved it. They got here. All right.
This is the lady who put the signs up. These people have been instructed to stay 10 feet.
2 hours early before us. They don't let us come in on time, but they are here for more than 2 hours before.
Yep.
They are setting up all the stuff, yep, and we don't have no rights in here.
Yep, they let seat fillers come in 2 hours before and block off entire rows. So I'm thinking that the answer might be, since these whips and security isn't helping, that we start screaming for Secret Service and explaining that non-credentialed people are on the floor. What do you guys think we should do? Look it. I'm going to show you all the reserved seats they've made in all the rabble-rouser sections. All these white signs have reserved written on them. Oh, look, Oregon, our partners in justice. These are all blocked off.
Okay, now I just want to jump in here and say she panned the camera across the entire stadium, and there's all these white signs, these white reserve signs. It looked like half the stadium was covered by white signs, ladies and gentlemen. And these are the people that did not want Hillary Clinton. They wanted Bernie Sanders, and yet you're seeing, as she pans the stadium, all these white signs where their seats. Their seats have all been reserved for hired hands, sit-ins, people that they were paying $50 to come in and just occupy these chairs and cheer every time one of these scumbags on stage said anything positive about Hillary or Hillary herself. Applause lines, ladies and gentlemen. In other words, the whole thing is nothing but a show. It's a show. The whole process is rigged. And again, I'm no fan of her, of Bernie Sanders. He's just as big a scumbag as Hillary is. But the point is, this illustrates perfectly just how rigged all of this stuff is. And the only reason why we even know this is because people are on the inside and, oops, somehow, by some miracle, they screwed up when they gave us the internet, and now we're able to have citizen journalists out there telling the truth and sharing the information to bypass the establishment media. This election, like all the others, is rigged. And this is very apparent. Anyway, continuing on with this.
Please, all these white signs were blocked off. There are still signs in them. They're not saying these seats are off limits. There are little packages of all the signs people need to hold up for the evening, blocked off, and there are white noise machines that have been installed above the states that have been protesting TPP and chanting and yelling. More than half of the seats have been marked off as reserved for scab.
Okay, now, more than half. Did you catch that at the end? More than half has been marked off as reserved or scabbed, you know, for scabs. In other words, people they're bringing in to, you know, hired guns, hired cheers. Where were the Bernie people? They were locked out. They were basically outside protesting, you know, holding signs and, I guess, and complaining that they're not even being allowed in. And now this guy here goes, because when the stories first came out about the seat fillers, many of us were asking, well, is this just something that's put out maybe by the Republican establishment to villainize things or maybe some disinformation? But here's a delegate here that actually says, no, these seat fillers, because the ad was, I think, a Craigslist ad. In fact, I know it was. It was, and we have the ad. We'll put it in the show notes. But the ad actually, you know, we were asking whether or not the ad was real. This guy here says, oh, no, don't doubt it. It is real. And he pretty much is saying the exact same thing that the last lady was saying.
Hey, everybody, I am at the convention. Obviously, I'm inside. I just left my delegation.
Okay, I apologize for the ambient noise in the background. Obviously, it was very noisy in there. But you can, if you listen carefully, you can make out what he's saying.
Because I'm a little concerned about something that I'm seeing. I don't have any facts about any of this. I don't want to make allegations of things that may or may not be true. But I got here late. Everybody who's been following me knows that I didn't go to bed from yesterday till 11 a.m. this morning. Slept in, didn't get to the convention on time. Got here around 5:30, 6 o'clock. When I got here, it was empty. Not a lot of people here for a lot of different reasons. There are Hillary delegates that aren't here because of events that are going on outside the convention. And there are a lot of Bernie people who aren't here because they're protesting outside. I got up and was contemplating leaving. But I'm going to stay because the convention is full now. Every seat in the House is full. So those seat fillers you guys were hearing about, it's real. They're in here now. There are a lot of people sitting near me who I don't know or have seen the entire time I was here.
I've been here. Okay, I don't know if you were able to make out what he said there. I just want to make sure that you heard it. He says the seat fillers, he says he started off, the place was pretty empty, and then he says all of a sudden, you know, and I'm paraphrasing here, but it's like flipping the switch, all of a sudden all these people show up, and suddenly the whole place is full. And he says, I was going to leave, but, you know, now all of a sudden the people have, you know, just showed up. He says, and it's people I have been here all week, and he says, and these are people I have not ever seen before. He says, so those seat fillers that you heard about, he says they're real. They're here. Okay, continuing on here.
You have been contacting me by text and direct message that the media is talking about how the convention looks more unified today, that, you know, everybody's applauding in unity and chanting in unity, and it's because the Bernie people aren't here. The Bernie people aren't here, and the people that are here are getting paid to sit in their seats and clap their hands. That's what I believe. I'm not 100% sure, but that's what I believe. That's what I see with my eyes. They have the floor closed off right now for anybody who gets out of their seat to go to the bathroom, which is how this all started for me, or to do anything. If you're hungry, if you leave your seat, you can't get back in right now. And my guess is that's because a seat filler is in your seat. And the optics of everybody having to shift and stand and move is not something they want to see. I don't know if they're going to do it for all the speakers tonight or if it was maybe just for Biden and then maybe just for Obama. But there are people in that hall who are being represented in the media as Bernie Sanders people, and they are not. Don't believe what you see on TV. Don't get mad at the people that you think are here representing you because they're not here right now. They're fighting outside. I'm going to join them later. I think it's important that some of us are in here with eyes and ears open to find out what's going on. But that's what I see with my eyes right now. There are a lot of people here that aren't delegates who are standing and clapping and cheering for somebody that we aren't ready to believe in. Share the word. Share this message. People need to know. The media needs to know so they stop telling everybody in America that we're together, because we're not together yet. There's a lot of work left to be done. The Democrats are not going to get a free ride on this. We will hold them accountable for what they've done, because that's what all you told me today based on my earlier video. There's no one issue that's going to make any of you ready for Hillary. So there's a lot of work left to be done. And get to it now. You guys got to start. It took me a long time to get this live connection going. I don't know when I'm going to be able to go on again.
I'm going to dump out of that right now. People, some of the Democrats are starting to wake up. He's right. There's a lot of work to be done yet, because the fact that you would even be in that camp shows that you're pretty ignorant. But the fact that you would be in either camp, really, I mean, and I understand why patriots go for Donald Trump, because you see what Hillary is and you think, dear God, anything would be better than that. And Donald Trump is saying a lot of the right things. Some of what Donald Trump says sounds really good. The free trade agreements that he talks about. Listen, I was listening to him and I was thinking to myself, you know, what the hell? I mean, why not vote for him? Look, we know what we're getting with Hillary. Assuming that any of this really mattered, I do think to a certain extent there's a real contest going on. But it's like mobster number one versus mobster number two is what it really looks like to me. So I've been a little conflicted on this. Maybe, you know, maybe I should not be so hard on Trump. Only because we know what we're going to get if Hillary gets in there. We're going to get gun control. We're going to get a carbon tax. We're going to get more Supreme Court justices that are going to reinterpret the Constitution unfavorably to our rights. Do we need to go down the list, really? I mean, she is everything that is wrong with America. She's pushing every agenda that is wrong for America and Americans. But all that being said, can we trust Trump? Can we trust him when he's already flip-flopped on his signature issue? Look at his vice president pick. Here's a guy, Pence, all in on free trade. Apparently, you know, Tea Party guy, a libertarian, I guess. And yet, you know, like many libertarians, he's all about the free movement of goods and services and human capital, ladies and gentlemen. Human capital. So can we trust him? Can we trust Trump when he would pick somebody who would be opposite of himself on the very signature issue that he ran on? His big platform. Hey, we're going to build a wall. Hey, we're going to go back to protectionism. Hey, we're going to protect America. We're going to restore American jobs. And yet, I'm going to pick a vice presidential candidate who's all in on everything that I just said we're going to do. He's completely the opposite, I mean. Does this make any sense, ladies and gentlemen? I feel like, hey, beam me up, Scotty. As I'm watching this thing develop, I gotta tell you folks, I'm really not very optimistic about where we're headed. And I don't think, you know, the problem I have here with Trump is whichever way the wind blows is the way he goes. He truly is a, quote, Democratic president if he becomes president. He truly is all in on democracy. Because if the mob screams something, Donald Trump will go along with it. And we see that with a gun control situation. Soon as one of these mass shootings took place, immediately his knees start buckling and he starts making noises. Oh, I was endorsed by the NRA, but no, we need a strong president and strong congressional characters as well that will say, you know what? The Constitution says shall not be infringed. And because of that, this is what we're going to do. We're not going to even entertain compromising on your gun rights because it's your right to keep and bear arms. That's what we need. We need people of character. We need people who are strong. We don't need weak-kneed people who are good at talking, teleprompter or not. Why can't we have men and, yes, women of principle in public office? But you see, ladies and gentlemen, I want to answer my own question. I'll tell you why we can't. Because to have men and women of principle in public office, you have to have a constituency who have principle. And we don't have that anymore in America. We don't have people who have principle anymore. When we have relatives that will stab each other in the back, nobody seems to care about their neighbor. Everybody, it's all, you know, what can I get? What can I get? What's in it for me? And this is why we will not survive as a nation until people get back to God, basically, repent, and start having a little empathy for our fellow man and woman. The Clinton years were so devastating to this nation. Listening to 8 years, hearing about Bill Clinton's member, and I, you know, at the time I was working at a TV station, and you know, these reporters are talking about how, well, you know, it's just about the sex, and you know, what he does in his personal life doesn't matter. And I was arguing with them because my argument is that what he does in his personal life is a reflection of everything that he is. If he can't be trusted to be true to his wife, how can he be trusted to be true to our nation, to our country? And there it is. Character matters, ladies and gentlemen. I can't stress that enough. Character matters. If you don't have character, you have nothing. And we're seeing it now. The country is coming apart because people have for too long ignored the fact that character matters. All right, I don't know how much more I want to say about this DNC. The Craigslist ad I mentioned says looking for 700 people to be utilized as actors during the national convention. We currently have a number of empty seats, it says, that will need to be filled as we are currently removing a number of people and need to refill their seats for the remainder of the conference. That's what the Craigslist ad says. It says, you will be paid $50 each night for the remainder of the convention. You will be required to cheer at all times and will be asked to dress properly and possibly wear some promotional material. So that's what the Craigslist ad said. And apparently it was real, according to the people there on the ground. So anyway, I'll put all that stuff in the show notes and more. Daily Mail says Hillary says Trump is the most dangerous presidential candidate ever, but she is. Says Clinton in an interview. Actually, it's got a quote here from CNN. Hillary Clinton said Monday that Donald Trump, the presumptive Republican nominee, was the most dangerous presidential candidate in the history of the United States. Now, Daily Mail says, Clinton, in an interview with CBS News' Charlie Rose, believes Donald Trump has no self-discipline, no self-control, no sense of history, no understanding of the limits of the kind of power could be applied that any president should impose upon himself. No, Hillary, it's not a matter of a king imposing power upon himself. And see, there, right there is the fundamental problem here. Presidents can't be trusted to impose power restrictions upon themselves. This is why we have a constitution. This is why the constitution says that we have to have a checks and system of checks and balances. It's to restrict the power. And if one becomes too powerful, the other branches of government can check that power. So fundamentally right here is enough reason for her to not ever get anywhere near the White House. All right, and she knows this stuff. It isn't like she doesn't know this. But she's not going to reference the Constitution. These people hate the Constitution. All right, I'm at the top of the hour. Hour number two of Govern America is straight ahead. Please stay with us.
The crisis of our republic, waging war on the new world order. This is Govern America. govern America.
We're just south of the Great Lakes capital city, covering all of North America via satellite, AM and FM stations all across the country, live and archived on the World Wide Web. This is Govern America, hour number two. I'm Darren Wiggs as we continue on here on this 30th of July, 2016. I'm not sure, in all of the confusion at the top of the show or the last hour, whether or not I gave the date or not, but it is July 30th, 2016. As we record this, about noon Eastern time, Eastern Daylight Time. And so if you're listening there, you're hearing us live if you're listening at that particular time. Otherwise, you're hearing a delay. And if, by the way, if you'd like to call in, you certainly are welcome to do so. I don't know how that would work. I'm sure there's noise on the line. Maybe it's cleared up some. For those of you just joining us, and by the way, greetings to all the folks in the chat room. I unfortunately can't get there, but I appreciate you, the various chat rooms, I should say. Greetings to all the folks listening to us via satellite up on American Voice Radio Network, all the folks on our streams, and the folks just joining us over at UCY.TV, and the various people that listen to us on micro stations all across the country. We appreciate the folks who run those, and thank you so much for what you do, reaching people on the ground. Well, that's why we're here, ladies and gentlemen. Anyway, as I said, we had some communication problems in the last hour. And so we were actually 15 minutes late getting on the air. I did notice during the break, I was able to check, and we are still up on the satellite, amazingly enough. Who knows? You know, hopefully by next week, everything will be cleared up, and we will we'll be back and up and running at normal. But if you'd like to try to call in, the phone number is 1-844-646-8376. That's 1-844-646-8376 or 1-844-6-GOVERN. Website, governamerica.com. That's governamerica.com. And my email address is radio@governamerica.com. Moving along here, in the interest of time, we were talking a little bit earlier about the convention, and I didn't mean to spend the whole first hour, well, 45 minutes that we were on the air anyway, talking about the convention. But I think it was important to illustrate just what a mess our so-called elections have become. We don't have honest elections. We haven't had honest elections in my lifetime, at least. And so that's why I kind of chuckle when I watch the State Department press briefings talking about how Iraq is going to have an election, and this country or that country, which has been historically unstable and continues to be so, they got a civil war going on at the time, and all of a sudden, isn't it wonderful that they elected their leader? Never mind the fact that the State Department is the one that installed the leader, you know, created the instability surrounding the whole thing that facilitated the rigged election process and the ousting of the dictator that they probably installed in the first place 20 years prior. This is how it works, by the way. I mean, I have to laugh when I hear about other countries having honest elections that are notoriously been intervened with by the State Department scumbags. Oh, they're having honest elections. No, they're not. What makes us think that Iraq or Afghanistan or Syria, if they get rid of Assad, what makes anybody think that they're going to have an honest election there when we're not clearly having honest elections here? That's my point. Anyway, I started article at the end of the last hour before we ran out of time, and I wanted to get back to that regarding Hillary Clinton, because this Daily Bell, they made a statement about her that I think is important to adhere to. They say, Clinton, in an interview with CBS News' Charlie Rose, believes Donald Trump has no self-discipline, no self-control, no sense of history, no understanding of the limits of the kind of power that any president should impose upon himself. And my point is that presidents don't impose power restrictions upon themselves. They can't be trusted to impose limits of power. This is why the Constitution has a balance of power, because the Founding Fathers understood that if left to their own devices, people become kings or queens. They become dictators. This is the biggest reason. I mean, we fought a revolution to get rid of King George. We don't want to return to a kingdom. We don't want to return. We don't want to be serfs. So leaders can't be trusted. Elected officials can't be trusted to impose restrictions of power upon themselves. But that's the way Hillary Clinton sees it. She thinks that she should just be allowed to decide what she wants to do. She wants to be queen. Obama, same thing, wants to be queen. George W. Bush, it's not just the Democrats. He very infamously said things would be a lot easier if I didn't have this Constitution. Things would be a whole lot easier if this were a dictatorship, is his exact words. Do any of you remember that? I sure do. Anyway, they say all of this could be applied to Clinton. She is by far the most dangerous of the two candidates. If Clinton gets into office, she will start or expand wars, and through large economic programs will ensure the U.S.'s quasi-depression deepens and that the economy never truly recovers at all. If things aren't getting worse, Hillary's power is not advancing. She is good at making things worse. As her opponent, Donald Trump's main recommendation is that he has not been a politician before. Donald Trump has chiefly been a builder and a businessman, but Hillary has basically been a politician. Economically speaking, politics is price fixing. Laws are price fixes, forbidding people from taking certain actions in favor of other ones. We may agree or disagree with the price fixes, but they exist and are a function of lawmaking. Price fixes always distort and degrade economies. The more laws you have, the more price fixing and the more delegation. We often argued for private justice, for instance, in which individuals work out their own civil and criminal defenses. The less price fixing or state control, the better. I would say, though, regarding these international agreements, we do need controls. And this is where I have to part ways with libertarianism. Folks, I am not a libertarian. I want to make that clear. Because libertarians seem to be, at least by my reading, they seem to be all in on complete free market no matter what, even to the point of bleeding out your labor to other countries. They don't seem to have a whole lot of concern about tariffs at the border. Well, if you don't have tariffs at the border, you don't have restrictions on the movement of goods, services, and people, and the penalties in place to import stuff into your country, then there's no reason why your multinational corporations should stay in the country. And this has been the problem, well, since the General Agreement on Tariffs and Trade, if you want to take it back that far, back in the 1940s. Which later became the World Trade Organization. This has been the problem, and it's gotten progressively worse. We documented over and over again, folks, we've documented the trade deficit that we had with Mexico. NAFTA was signed in 93, went into effect, I think, in 94. We really began to feel the pain of NAFTA in 1995. All of the promises of prosperity, none of it ever materialized. Oh, yeah, there were winners in some places, and there were losers. There were many losers. Most of the country were losers. And we've never recovered from this. We've never recovered from NAFTA. So a sane person might say, well, that idea didn't fail. You know, if you do something and you think that it didn't work out so well, clearly we have unemployment stats that are cooked, but even with the cooked numbers, you can see it's stagnant at best. Even if you believe the official numbers, unemployment disability has skyrocketed. The workforce participation rate is not, you know, that really reflects the best what really is going on here as far as people in the job market. You've got all these idle people. And yeah, some of it is automation. And it's a perfect storm because the automation comes along at the same time as the deliberate outsourcing of our jobs. And this is not by accident either, by the way, folks. So, what do we do? But with stagnant numbers, with stagnant unemployment. You can't possibly believe this is working. What it's doing is it's making certain segments of the population richer at the expense of everybody else. So for them, for the people that are pushing it, it is working. And this is why they're doing it. Because they don't care about the country. They're globalists. They don't care about you. They want you to starve. They want you to die because you're a leech on their planet. That's the bottom line. Anyway, they go on to talk about in this article about the Clinton Foundation. Before I talk us out of time here, Hillary Clinton has done well in the current system. She and her husband have built a gigantic nonprofit and reportedly use it to trade favors with powerful people around the world. She and Bill are connected at the highest levels and can influence U.S. political and military decisions. People will pay lots of money to anyone with this sort of clout, but the money does not apparently go directly to the Clintons. Instead, it reportedly goes to their nonprofit. So it does not seem as if the Clintons are accepting payments for their quote-unquote help. How well is this nonprofit run? Here from an April 2015 New York Post article, it's titled Clinton Foundation, a Slush Fund. It says the Clinton Foundation's finances are so messy that the nation's most influential charity watchdog put it on its quote-unquote watch list of problematic nonprofits last month. The Clinton family's mega charity took in more than $140 million in grants and pledges in 2013, but spent just $9 million on direct aid. The group spent the bulk of its windfall on administration, travel, and salaries and bonuses, with the fattest payouts going to family friends. It seems like the Clinton Foundation operates as a slush fund for the Clintons, said Bill Allison, a senior fellow at the Sunlight Foundation, a government watchdog. Okay, that's the end of the New York Post quote. Now, they say supporters of the Clintons would no doubt disagree, of course, with this assessment, as would Hillary herself. But who cares what Hillary has to say? Anyway, and here's the thing, folks. I'm not going to read this whole article because it goes on for several more paragraphs. The bottom line is, I think all of these emails, the whole email scandal with the 33,000 emails, you know, 33. Yeah, that's an amazing number, isn't it? And a Masonic number. But the 33,000 emails that were deleted was just a distraction. It was a red herring. Not that national security isn't important, but are you kidding me when we're letting foreigners in unvetted? Is it really about national security? No, they're focusing all the attention on this and completely ignoring the Clinton Foundation. I mean, is she taking bribes from foreign governments through this Clinton Foundation? Certainly would seem so. She's making speeches, doing political favors from foreign governments in the role of State Department. These are the things that need to be focused on. Yeah, I'm not saying they should ignore the email server either. But there is so much criminal activity here. Problem with Hillary Clinton is she's too big to jail. She is an insider, has a lot of information on these people, and she is in a unique position of being able to tell them, you know what? I can destroy you. You take me down, you will go down with me. And that is exactly what I think happened. They won't touch her because their hands are dirty too. Every single one of them are all criminals. And they won't touch her because they're afraid of her. This is the extent to which our government, our country, is being run by mafia dons. And these mafia dons are competing for power, for control, and for your money, your wealth. And unless something can be done about this, America will not stand because it's being destroyed from within. I'm sorry, I don't mean to paint such an ugly picture. I'm not trying to make things negative. There's a tremendous amount of things to be positive about. For once, people are actually paying attention. They're starting to learn, oh, how rigged the system is. But what do we do about it? The only thing I can say is focus on your states, because the feds, the federal government is gone. It's too far gone. And this is why the media, the establishment media, just turn it off, folks. Because this is why they, every single time you turn it on, this is all they're talking about. The president, the president, the president. They don't even talk about Congress. It's all about the president, presidential election. When the real issue is on your local level, that's the only place you slaves can make a difference. And quit being slaves. We had a caller on the line. Unfortunately, the caller dropped. If you want to call, 1-844-646-8376. 1-844-646-8376. But they conclude this article by saying, new international trade courts are being created that will allow corporations to have equal footing with nation states. See, this is important. Why isn't the media talking about this? Because it's important. That's why. They say none of this is coincidence. Trade deals like the TPP or TPIP, which is the Atlantic one, are both fundamental building blocks of this new era. Hillary, from what we can tell, is intended to be a point person to advance this paradigm. Tomorrow's globalism, as Hillary's backers conceive of it, will be racked by war and ruled via corporate authoritarianism. As we pointed out previously, Hillary is no Democrat and no liberal. No, she's a corporatist, folks. That's the bottom line. They say, finally, in conclusion, win or lose, Hillary will continue to be a dangerous backer and builder of corporate globalist technocracy. And there you have it. If she wins, she'll pursue her goals on the national stage. They're not her goals, ladies and gentlemen. She's controlled. She is a puppet. Her strings are being pulled. She's pushing the agenda she's being given. But if she loses, she will continue to work behind the scenes. Either way, she's dangerous. But the corporate globalist technocracy, they have it nailed. That is what's on the menu. That is what's being shoved down your throat. She has there's a huge number of taxes that she has to plan. She's planning on pushing if she's the president. $350 billion income tax increase, according to Americans for Tax Reform. $350 billion income tax increase. Business tax increase to the tune of $275 billion. A quote-unquote fairness tax increase of $400 billion. They say Clinton has called for a tax increase between $400 and $500 billion by restoring basic fairness to our tax code. Whatever that means. Sounds like communism to me. Isn't communism, doesn't it promise to make everything fair? Yeah, everything's fair, and you don't have anything. Nobody can have any more than others. So they call it a fair share surcharge. There is a capital gains tax increase that she wants to push. To counter the tyranny of today's earnings report. See, nobody's allowed to earn, except, of course, her husband, and her daughter, and other establishment wonks. A tax on stock trading. An exit tax, rather than reduce extremely high uncompetitive corporate tax rate, Clinton has proposed a series of measures aimed at inversions, including a exit tax on income earned overseas. This is just a sample of things she wants to do. Billions and billions and billions. Increasing taxes on people that are already struggling to survive. All right, I'll tell you what. We already have a call on the line. Let me see if we can make this work. Hello, caller. Who do we have on the line here? Hello, you're on the air. Okay, I'm not hearing anybody. I'm not sure if you're hearing me. Hello, caller. And you can hear the static. All right, I don't know what's going on. I can't hear anything. Well, I'm sorry that's not working out, like everything else today. Well, unfortunately, we can't hear you. I don't know why you can't hear us, or we can't hear you. Anyway, there is such thing called the Lion Hillary Doll. At least somebody's making a little money off her. You can go to some, and I forget who sent this to me, but thanks to whoever it was. You can go to lionhillarydoll.com without the G, Lion Hillary. Lionhillarydoll.com, and for $24.99, they're selling a doll that you can squeeze her, and she'll tell 18 of her best stories. Now, none of them are free, or none of them are true, but you can listen to Hillary, I guess, in her real voice. It says, squeeze the Lion Hillary doll in the front and center at approximately her waistline, and she will tell one of Hillary's unbelievable tales. Squeeze her again, and she'll tell another. 18 of them in all. So I'm not sure anybody that would want to hear Hillary, but if you are starved for entertainment for $24.99, they'll ship it for free. You can get the Lion Hillary doll. Anyway, moving along. Washington Examiner, just to give you an illustration just how bad things are. Washington Examiner is pointing out the number of Americans, there are a number of record high number of Americans are renouncing their citizenship. A total of 508 renounced their citizenship in the second quarter, just the second quarter of this year. According to information published by the IRS, putting the country on track to lose at least the second highest number of citizens on record. You see, at one time in this nation, our nation, this was it was an honor to be an American. Now it's become a liability. What does this tell you about where we're headed, ladies and gentlemen? At one time, America was that shining beacon on the hill. Remember the speech? At least it seemed that way. Whether or not it was true. And there was a reason why people wanted to come here. There's a reason why people floated on rafts and drowned in the oceans to try to get here. There's a reason why they still are doing that to a certain extent. Because there is a belief that if I could just get to America, things will be okay. If I can just get there. And now we have people leaving in droves. We have people saying, you know what, I wash my hands of it. I didn't leave America, it left me. It's sad. All right, here we see from the New American, Obama administration expands refugee programs for Central America. Speaking of people that still want to come here, they say the Obama administration announced on July 26th that will expand the in-country refugee processing for migrants who want to come to the United States from Honduras, El Salvador, and Guatemala, and will also participate in transferring some refugees to a temporary transit shelter in Costa Rica for processing. Now, I don't have a problem with immigration if people who are trying to immigrate here go through the proper channels. We've always had, you know, every time you talk about this argument, the other side says things like, well, we're a nation of immigrants. But no, folks, we're not a nation of people who are allowed to come here unvetted, without restriction. If you don't have borders, you don't enforce your borders, you can't survive as a country. And I sound like a broken record. But that never ceases to be true. So they say White House Deputy Homeland Security Advisor Amy Pope made the announcement of the pending program expansion, and Deputy Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas, in another statement, said that the program will now allow some unmarried siblings and in-country parents and other caregivers to move to the United States along with a child approved for the program. Quote, "My goal is for individuals to have legitimate humanitarian claims, to not take the dangerous journey through Mexico, and to accept our outstretched arm of relief," Mayorkas told reporters on July 26 during a conference call. He said he doesn't know how many people will come into the United States under this expansion. So, here we're going to have a pipeline for terrorism from Central America, ladies and gentlemen. And the beat goes on. While they try to take away your freedoms under the guise of Homeland Security. We're at the bottom of the hour already. We're going to take the break. When we come back, we'll continue. This is Govern America. Please don't go away. All right, we're back. This is Govern America, the website governamerica.com. That's governamerica.com as we continue here. Interesting article in the New American regarding trade. EU as model for misnamed TPP and TTIP. The two massive and dangerous trade agreements, the Transatlantic Investment Partnership and the Trans-Pacific Partnership, loom on the near horizon. Now, this is one thing that they put it on the back burner until after the so-called election. To see if, because it became, again, remember those congressional seats, ladies and gentlemen, that are up for grabs this time around? Yeah, there are too many Congress critters that are afraid of not getting reelected, which tells me that there is a certain amount of reality, I guess, for the election systems. I think that there are many different ways to throw an election. There are many different ways to rig it. And there seems to be it seems like they have to have a certain number of people on one side or the other, or it becomes harder to rig it. And anyway, there seems to be enough concern by the establishment candidates that they're afraid of ticking off too many of the American people. Anyway, so they've set this aside until after the so-called election, but they plan on revisiting it. Of course, we know that Obama already signed it. It's just waiting for congressional ratification. Now, whether or not that will happen, I don't know. I don't have a crystal ball. Wouldn't know how to use it if I did. The point is that these people plan to revisit this. This is another thing, as I was saying earlier, you would think that destroying the country, you know, this doesn't work. It's not working. It's not creating jobs. But that's okay. It's not working. Full speed ahead. Let's do more of it. And that's the problem, because it is working for them, but not for you. They say, we place, the article continues, let me back up here. Like icebergs of doom, these trade agreements, the TPP and the TTIP, they lie mostly submerged, threatening to rip asunder the hulls of all sovereign ships of state that dare to sail their waters. We place the word trade in quotation marks because these twin pacts, which the Obama administration has listed as top priority items on its overall agenda, run to thousands of pages and establish international quote-unquote rules for hundreds of domestic issues that have nothing to do with traditional notions of trade, ranging from farming, banking, mining, fishing, manufacturing, immigration, migration, and labor to environment, insurance, intellectual property, textiles, etc. Ladies and gentlemen, this is a whole system of law that's being adopted here. This is a whole system of international or global law, which is designed, they say it'll undermine sovereignty. Yes, That's because it's designed to undermine sovereignty. This is your New World Order. This is your global government. This is what it's designed to do. If the Federal Fair Packaging and Labeling Act were applied to the TTIP and TPP, then President Obama, former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, current Secretary of State John Kerry, U.S. Trade Ambassador Michael Froman, and all of the rest of the negotiators of this fraudulent and deceptive deal, these fraudulent and deceptive deals, plural, would be arrested for criminal misrepresentation, not to mention the even more serious charge that they could and should be hit for pushing these schemes to destroy our national sovereignty and the constitutional order that they have sworn to defend. The TPP treaty is an incomprehensible labyrinth of legalese running 5,544 pages, longer than the Bible, the complete works of Shakespeare, or J.R.R. Tolkien's Lord of the Rings trilogy. Negotiated in total secret, despite promises of transparency, the TPP proposes integration, quote-unquote, that would entangle the United States in the political and economic affairs of 11 Pacific Rim member states. Australia, Brunei, Canada, Chile, Japan, Malaysia, Mexico, New Zealand, Peru, Singapore, and Vietnam. That's the current membership, but there are already plans to widen it to include Communist China and Russia. Which, the whole reason why they originally were pushing this was because, oh, we got to compete with China. Oh, we can't let China get the upper hand. Never mind the fact that we were the ones that empowered China to begin with. Thank you, WTO. Yeah, Taiwan, if I remember correctly, was kicked out of the WTO to allow Communist China in. And hey, folks, your buddy Ron Paul repeatedly voted for most favored nation trading status for Communist China. Yeah, your buddy Ron Paul did that. Sorry, I just have to point it out. Anyway, and what does most favored nation mean? It means they're a member of the club. The name implies it's only one nation. No, every country that's a member of the WTO, we've documented on this show in the past, is a quote-unquote most favored nation. Which means that others that aren't in the club are left out. So everybody wants to be in the club. Because if you're not in the club, you won't have an economy. Or your economy will be significantly restricted. And this is how they're getting it done. Through economic means, control of the corporations, control of the trade. So free trade, ladies and gentlemen, is not free trade at all. It's mislabeled, as this article says. What free trade really is restrictions on trade for countries that aren't a member of the club. If you're not in the club, you're nobody. We don't have to do business with you. We'll starve. Your people can starve. Your economy can starve. We don't care anything about you. So everybody wants to do the globalist things, adopt the globalist rules, because that's how you get into the club. That's how you make money. That's how you have prosperity. So anyway, they say likewise, the still secret transatlantic trade and investment partnership calls for deep and comprehensive integration between the United States and the European Union, now comprised of 28 member states, 27 Well, 27 now that the Brits have left. And that's another kicker. The integration of the United States and the EU would mean the United States would be bound by the same stifling, all-encompassing, top-down rules issued either by the unelected EU bureaucrats in Brussels, listeners, or another international entity that the British just voted to escape from with the Brexit vote. So this transatlantic trade and investment partnership, according to this article, this is a backdoor way for the Brussels stronghold, for lack of a better word, to control America. Anyway, the British were right to reject the EU because the consequences of remaining in the EU were astoundingly bad, including authoritarian government without voter input on most issues, a rapidly inflating currency that political elites print and use to favor one country or group over another, to maintain power and guide policy out of control immigration, which has steadily led to cultural conflict and increased spending on welfare, hurting the unemployment or the employment picture, and rules covering every aspect of daily life, including size and shapes of fruit that are allowed to be sold, which are simply stifling. The Brexit vote on June 23rd was an astounding rebuke, not only to pro-EU elites of all three major British parties, but to the entire globalist lobby worldwide. And the jury, in my opinion, is still out on whether or not the establishment wanted this to happen. I find it very difficult to believe that Cameron and the others over there that were all in on the European Union, Britain staying in that, just so willingly laid down the gauntlet and said, you know what, the people have spoken. Hard to believe that they just would give up that easily. So, I don't know. Time will tell if this ends up being something that somehow works out in their favor. They always have a plan B, ladies and gentlemen. All right, we got another call on the line. I'm a little reticent to try this, but maybe it'll work this time. Hello, caller, you're on the air. Who do we have?
Hi, Darren.
Hi.
Can you hear me?
I hear you loud and clear. Well, except for the static.
Wonderful, wonderful. Well, I don't hear the static. You're very clear as a bell on this end.
Okay, well, very good.
I want to, again, compliment you. You're going full steam ahead. Your time off must have been energizing.
Well,
and you're doing a valuable job. It's important, even though it's depressing to be here. It's,
sorry.
I always say, here's Darren cheering us up again.
But, well, I do the best I can.
And you do an excellent job. I'm very happy. When I can, I contribute a little to you.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
So, this is Daniel, by the way, in FEMA Region 9.
And, welcome. What's going on in FEMA Region 9? That's California, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
Southern California. And I just finished watching a movie you might have seen. It's I believe it's available on Breitbart. It's called Clinton Cash. It's a documentary that there's actually a book by the same name.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought I knew pretty much what the Clintons' crimes were, and I generally did. But this thing goes into such detail. It brings to mind that plus the things you're talking about. What we have isn't democracy. It's a kakistocracy, which is a Greek word. It means rule by the worst levels of society.
Very good.
That's what we have.
Spell that.
And that's actually, it's KAKISTOCRACY.
Okay.
Like, almost like caca.
Mm-hmm.
Kakistocracy. And it may have the same root, I don't know. But for that same reason, I take a little bit of exception, as we've discussed before, and I don't know if I can convince you, but I might plant some seeds,
okay,
that really allowing government to put in tariffs is not a good idea. And here's a couple of reasons why. Number one, as in any government power, first of all, it's based on immorality, because it's not morally possible for you or me to give another entity powers that we don't have to delegate. Government only gets its power from the people, whether one recognizes that or not, even by passive assent,
mm-hmm,
which is, I have to say, I'm as guilty of as most people. But the government, you can't give the government a power that you don't have to delegate to it. And if you don't have the power to set up an area around your neighbor's house and say any food or any other goods that he, quote, imports into his house, he has to pay you a tariff for. If you don't have that power, then I don't see how you can morally delegate that same power to a government, even if you include yourself and say, well, I have to pay it too. It's still not a moral thing. The second area is that, like all, since government is a kakistocracy, that having power over others attracts incompetent, ignorant, lazy, crooked people to wield that power, they always want more of it. It's never enough. If you watch that Clinton cast,
I agree with you on that.
You'll see that it's never enough power. The hundreds of millions that we know the Clintons have, and they still want more. Mm-hmm. And the evil that they have wrought on others, and they still want to do more. And they're just one example, like you. The Bush crime family, I think I want to get that book, even though I know it'll depress me further. That's even a family of not very smart people. And the crap that they've been involved, you're probably old enough to remember this SNL scandal.
Mm-hmm.
Neil and I believe there's a sister, I don't know her name, Neil and this sister pretty much kept in the shadows. And I think even Jeb Bush were all involved in the shady loans that actually were this. It wasn't an SNL scandal. It was a crooked loan scandal. And even the first Gulf War was a distraction from the involvement of Neil Bush in that. He ended up with a $10,000 fine for the millions that he stole.
Mm-hmm.
So if you allow government to have, even if, let's even say tariffs were good, which I'm going to show you in a second why they're not good, but let's say tariffs were a good thing, and you give government that power even though you don't have it to give to them, they're going to expand that power into the exact programs that you're describing now, the TPP and the ABC and NAFTA and GATT and the whatever the Atlantic Trade Agreement
T-tip.
Is and the European Union. They're going to keep expanding it. The European Union was supposed to be just a tariff-free zone where it was just about economics or just about trade. It wasn't even totally about economics. And now it's practically a government of its own with unelected people in it.
See,
so
what it sounds like, I hear you saying, it almost sounds like you're arguing for anarchy.
Close, but I'll tell you what I'm advocating in a second. But really, the one other thing that is an example of how tariffs are not good. You remember we had a huge steel industry in mm-hmm. this country, even before World Wars.
Right.
It was just to build things, the railroads and buildings and all the other things that we built in this country, and we had a huge steel industry. Well, they lobbied to have trade barriers set up when Europe started competing, and Japan had a great steel industry. And they started competing, so they said, oh, protect us from this evil competition. So, of course, we erect trade barriers. And then what happened? Well, two other things happened. We had World War II, one and two. World War II is really World War I-B. But after World War II, what did the U.S. taxpayer end up doing? We were forced to pay to rebuild the steel industries of Europe and Japan. And when they rebuilt it, it was all new plants. We haven't had a new steel plant in this country since about World War II, maybe before then. And so they were building even better steel. Well, the car industry in this country, I remember when I was a kid in the 50s and 60s, that the car industry was starting to buy foreign steel because it was so good and cheap. And so the domestic steel industry was saying, no, we need higher tariffs to protect us. We're not going to modernize our plants. It's too expensive, which it probably was. And since the U.S. taxpayer paid to rebuild the steel industries that are competing now, so we had even higher trade barriers. And so for a while, the steel buyers in this country were forced to buy inferior steel because there was no competition from the better plants. Finally, even the trade barriers couldn't prevent people from wanting the better steel. You remember hearing probably as a kid about how good Swedish steel was, you know, even in razor blades.
Mm-hmm.
And so eventually the trade barriers collapsed, you know, just couldn't prevent the people from importing it. And the whole idea collapsed because the steel industry here just was so complacent, and partly for a good reason, partly not. Partly just laziness. It's easier to bribe some congressmen. Oh, excuse me. Contribute to some congressmen than it is to rebuild a plant. And eventually, that started the collapse of the industry in this country.
Okay, but Daniel, let me jump in here. Let me jump in here for just a minute.
Sure.
Where is the steel industry now? Since they have lowered the barriers, lowered the tariffs or eliminated them with foreign countries, and they're engaging in so-called free trade. Where's the steel industry now? It's over in China.
Well,
it's over there.
That may be. Yeah, that may be, but part the whole reason that that collapse started was the tariffs. If, first of all,
see, I don't agree with that.
If government hadn't intervened, well, if I don't know how you, I can't, because if government hadn't, first of all, forced us to build a better industry outside of this shore, these shores,
mm-hmm.
and at the same time protected the domestic industry from having to compete. If you just took government out of the equation there and said government doesn't have that power on either side, we would still have an industry. The plants might be smaller. I think there are some newer plants in East Chicago and Gary, Indiana, which was almost a ghost town for a while. Mm-hmm. What they did was they built smaller plants that can adapt to changes in the need for different kinds of steel for different industries. And as demand changes for different kinds of steel, because a big plant can't do that. They make the steel they make, and it, for them to change is a big thing. But the smaller plants, there are a couple of newer plants. And so the future, at least for now, given what we have, what government has served us, this horrible plate, and we've picked and ate at it as best we could. Now we throw away the plate and say, the old ideas about steel are no good anymore, and so trying to pick up where they can, there are smaller plants that are doing okay now.
Well,
the other side of that is,
I see around me, Daniel, is plants that are out of business. I can drive into town here 15 minutes from where I'm at here right now, and I can point out the places that used to be in business, thriving, employing locals here. And now they're vacant. There's grass growing up and weeds in the parking lots, and there's lots of windows that are broken out. I don't know. Okay, let me put this to you.
Well, having a steel plant, wait a minute.
Let me ask you a
sure.
question. How would you, without using tariffs as a penalty to export jobs, If a company goes to some foreign country, it costs them more money to import their goods here where the market is than if they had just set up shop here and stayed here. How, without that mechanism, would you keep jobs in America?
Well, keeping a job doesn't mean keeping the same job. We don't have too many buggy whip makers anymore.
Well, sure.
That may sound a little like a ridiculous example, but really, things change, and the ability of an economy to adapt to it, meaning by economy, I mean entrepreneurs, business people. There are companies that are going to go out of business. For instance, if it hadn't been for government intervention, GM would be split up into several smaller companies now. It wouldn't have gone away, but it would be several smaller companies. The unions would have had to renegotiate, which is probably the biggest reason for bailing them out was the pull the unions had on the administration at the time. And the banks and the unions are the ones that made out from keeping GM afloat and appointing. I mean, whoever heard of a government that could just, in this country anyway, that could just appoint a new president of a company and fire the other one. If that isn't national socialism,
look,
I don't know what this is.
Really kind of getting off the track, though. I mean, the question is, we need to manufacture. I mean, the people make money from manufacturing, and people have to be able to have, you know, employment in order to do that. Now, you can argue, well, people can live off the land and all that stuff, and I'm sure some people would argue that. Problem with that, of course, is that you can't own land anymore. It's all tied to the currency, because if you're not making any money, you can't pay the extortion to keep your land. So you don't really own it.
Right, and
that's a separate issue, too.
That is government, again.
Right, yeah, I understand.
It all points to the evils of government, is at the basis of every problem that you identify.
I agree.
In your show.
I agree.
Is government.
I agree.
So, to me, the way to solve the problem is to go back, and I know you're kind of a biblical guy, 1 Samuel 8, chapter 8, verse 11 to 18, describes perfectly what will happen to any society that wants to have another human being ruling over them. And it says what how they're going to abuse their sons and daughters and take their crops and put them under the thumb and make them slaves and this and that. And that is really, in colorful terms, that is what governments do. Government, and I'm going to get to what I think is the solution.
Okay.
But government is nothing but applying force from an elect group, and I don't necessarily even mean an elected group, because who do we get to elect is the people that the two parties, which is really one party, tell us we have available to choose from.
Mm-hmm.
So what kind of choice is that?
Well,
I've got to say, locally, I've dealt with my local government here. They're as corrupt as the others. They just don't have all the power.
I agree.
They're in there for themselves and get their cronies going and raise taxes.
But at least on a local level, and the reason why I always push this is because at least on a local level, if you get enough like-minded people with you to apply pressure, you could conceivably do something, and many have. But I understand.
Well,
it's an uphill fight even on a local level. I totally understand that.
It is, and even small governments, their goal is to grow bigger anyway, and so they'll get to the point. Plus, one of the ways they do is they use your money to advertise things to pretend they're going to give away free stuff, you know, like, oh, this for the children. How many times have you heard some program, and they always say it's for the children?
Right.
They don't tell you it's for their children, not for yours.
Okay, but I would like to come back to what we were talking about earlier.
Sure.
How would you keep businesses here? How would you keep your corporations from outsourcing jobs to other countries without erecting tariffs?
Well, I would do that, and although I minored in economics, I'm not as good at explaining this as Henry Hazlitt is in his little book called Economics in One Lesson. So if you haven't read that, and if your readers haven't read that, I think you can even get it for free, and it's very short, and it goes through a lot of this stuff, but better than I can. But basically, without tariffs, what you have is you have to have businesses that are adaptable to changes. And
well, that's not an answer, though. The problem is...
It is an answer, if I can finish
okay,
it, because
all right.
what you're going to have, just like I said with buggy whips, you've got changes in demand.
Yeah, but we still have a demand for automobiles, for instance. We still have a demand for automobiles.
But they don't. Yes, and to an extent, they would still be made here but for the taxation and regulation. You know that there's even regulation on the cheapest
car. But Daniel, here's the problem with this. The taxation and regulation, okay, some of the regulations are necessary. I mean, you don't want to have unsafe cars. If the car flips over, you don't want the roof to
collapse. Yes, but you don't need government.
Okay, but... But lowering the bar, erecting these, not having tariffs, these countries, these companies are able to go wherever it's cheapest. And they have no penalty when they re-import this stuff back into the country. This is why everything's bleeding to death.
Well, yeah, but that's just a snapshot. Without the
I think that's the crux of the problem.
Penalties. First of all, there wouldn't be the pressure to leave this country but for the taxes and regulations that the government, especially the federal government, imposes. You and I could start a car company and say, which is virtually impossible today for just a startup. Tesla did
it. I agree.
And they had government help, too, for now. But they're going to have government, they also have government barriers in some states and are allowed to sell their cars.
Mm-hmm.
So, What the first thing you're going to have is you're going to have a freer entry into the market for people who are here. Now, what you're also going to have is you're going to have some car manufacturers that don't have the onus of union labor, which demands wages far above the productivity that they provide, which is a penalty that the purchaser pays. And so if the purchaser has a choice of paying that labor penalty and the government penalty of all these extra things added onto cars, quote, for safety, which aren't necessarily safe, like airbags, you've got that penalty, and they'd be faced with buying a car like that made here or buying a car without government. You and I could make a car, and we could say, this is the cheapest car you can have. It doesn't have some of the advantages that the more expensive cars have, but poor people would be able to buy them, like with the Fords, you know, when they first started making them cheaply there, here in the state. Now, it may be that ultimately cars might not be made here except for certain specialty cars, you know, something very fancy or something
and
very
and
cheap.
This is the problem.
Would not
right?
be made here, but as long as you have
hey, wait a minute.
Labor
Daniel,
force.
Daniel, wait a minute. All I hear you saying, though, and I respect your opinion, I really do, and I appreciate you expressing it, because we make each other sharper by arguing, you know, counterpoints and that sort of thing, and I do respect your opinion, but I disagree with you, because what I hear you saying is that the way to solve this problem is to simply adapt. Adapt to the fact that you no longer have industry. Adapt to the fact that you no longer have jobs. There's poverty all across this country right now because of these trade agreements. There's policy, this policy of outsourcing jobs, reducing tariffs. And look, if you got two cups, okay, you got two glasses that are joined with a hole in the middle, and you got one full of water and one nearly either empty or completely empty or almost empty, you put a hole puncture between those two, the one that's full is going to run into the empty one. We have been the full cup. We have been the ones that have had the jobs, had the wealth. The other countries have been the ones that haven't. When you the mechanism that keeps those two cups separate are the barriers, which are tariffs. When you remove that, you remove any, arguably you've created an incentive for companies to outsource. And I don't see any way back from this without reversing course and erecting these tariffs. Now, if I'm wrong, I try to look at things objectively. I have no agenda. I have no agenda but the truth. And I have no agenda but advancing the well-being of our country. But as I see this thing, and I've looked at this and studied this for years, I don't see any way back other than reversing course. And honestly, it wouldn't be without a lot of pain right now. I think there's no way we're going to avoid going through an economic collapse, because they've engineered it to be so. But if we're ever going to hope to have anything other than a world government and a corporatocracy run by oligarchs, controlling the masses who are impoverished and enslaved and who are worker bees on a global plantation, we have to do something with regard to tariffs. I appreciate your call, sir. I do have to move on because we have another caller here. I blew off the break.
Sure.
But I appreciate it, Daniel.
I'm going to keep working on you.
Okay, that's fine.
Your analogy with the two glasses is wonderful.
Thank you.
And I'll start with that next time.
All right. God bless you, sir. Appreciate the call.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye. And we're in hour number three, ladies and gentlemen. I won't bother playing the open. There's no sense in doing that. But we do have another call on the line, and I appreciate Daniel. Listen, I mean, this is what it's about, folks, having discourse, having conversation, and we learn from each other. And I'm not saying I have all the answers either. I would never sit here and pretend to know everything. My goodness, no. There's a lot I have to learn, too. But I just can't see it. You know, tariffs are necessary. I look at the way it was before these free trade agreements, which facilitated the lowering and elimination of tariffs on goods and services, and and gave incentive for the free movement of what they call human capital. They call us human capital. Think about that. You're a resource. What's a resource? Something to be used up, and when you're no longer useful, to be discarded. That's what globalism has made you. You resource out there. All right, back to the phones. We got a next caller. Who do we have here?
Yeah, this is Ken from West Virginia.
Hi there. How you doing?
And pretty good. A couple of things. First of all, a while back you were talking about the EU regulations on the size and size and shape of cucumbers and bananas and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that I remember hearing a couple of years ago about a tomato grower down in Florida who wanted to produce some of these tasty heirlooms, or, you know, that have wonderful flavor, and but they look kind of funky. And he wasn't allowed to grow them. And what turned out to was there was a regulations, and this wasn't government. This was industry. And there's and I looked it up, and there's something called the Florida Tomato Committee. It regulates the shape and size of, and this is an industry. This isn't governmental.
Well, I believe it.
Trademark. And now we're from Florida tomatoes adhere to a set of standards of for size, specs, and regulation. Anyway, that's anyway. So there you go. You can register the Florida Tomato Committee. But now,
well, you know, just build up on this just a minute, Kent. We have government bureaucrats that regulate the size of holes in Swiss cheese. So everything is like this. You know?
Yeah.
Anyway, go ahead. I'm sorry. With your next point.
Yeah. Somebody's doing it no matter who's paying for it. There's somebody
exactly.
regulating it, you know. Yeah. And the previous caller was, that was very, very interesting about the development over, you know, the investment went overseas for more modern plant and equipment, but I always thought that actually my theory about this Make America Great Again was what's captured the fancy of so many people is that they are going by what living memory, you know, and living memory of for these people quite often is the 50s and 60s
sure.
when those factories were booming, and now those were the years post-war where those factories that made cars and steel and everything in Europe and in Japan were destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
And so basically those jobs were taken by Americans because those guys didn't have work. So that's when, you know, everything that could be made could be sold. Workers could demand top dollar. Unions could demand top dollar. And, of course, things developed... things recovered overseas, as he says, probably with the benefit of, you know, Marshall Plan, and they had better plant and equipment, and so, but really, I think it's maybe a comparison would be to the railroads, where Penn Central was, rather than reinvesting in, Penn Central ceased to be an industrial, run by industrialists and become run by financiers, and instead of reinvesting in capital and equipment and improving the railroads, they sort of abandoned it and put their money in it into God knows what hotels or something because they could get 0.05, 3, 2, 4% or better return on investment, you know, these. And probably the people in the steel industry in the United States, okay, the Swedish steel and the German steel and Japanese, but then there's probably an improvement beyond that. And the American industrialists, there ceased to be run by industrialists who would have taken on improvements and wanted to compete.
Mm-hmm.
And you had finance type guys who just said, well, we can get more money by putting our money into theme parks or something, you know. And they diversified. So I kind of think, I've sort of noticed that, like in Germany, you have 4 or 5 or 6 different companies that, you know, they just make tools or something. And they don't diversify, and they don't play this Wall Street game of diversifying and stripping out assets and stripping out because they can get, you know, a fraction of a penny more on a return on investment of $5 billion or something, which is, you know, a nice bonus for somebody. So I think that if to make America great again and to bring back those booming factories, there's just going to have to be another war. In which case, everybody's planned victory is going to get destroyed.
Yeah, and I think that is on order. I think that there's certainly evidence that they're planning that and have been for a long time. I don't know. You know, I understand what you're saying about Donald Trump and people. He's kind of tapped into the nostalgia, hasn't he?
Yeah. And when they say, well, these are the late 50s, early 60s, and I said, well, yeah, well, those are the guys that weren't, when those factors, you know, in the 50s and 60s were booming, and the unions could say, well, you know, you're selling everything you can make, and the companies were making, the money was rolling in, and they were getting the top dollar, and you know, and they're nostalgic for that, but
that's,
the only way that's going to come back again is there's a, you know, unless there's tariffs and everything, or if there's a war, which would, make those factories viable.
Well, what's ironic about the unions is that the unions supported Clinton big time, and he was the one that signed the NAFTA agreement. So he actually did the damage to them, stabbing them in the back. Now, not to let the Republicans off hook, because as I remember it, it was George Herbert Walker Bush, the 41st president, that negotiated the NAFTA agreement, and it was Bill Clinton that came in after him that signed it. So all of them are guilty. But just the fact that the these unions didn't tell their members what the whole thing was about, and they blindly support candidates that that are stabbing the American worker in the back. Now, as a result of it, they're paying the price because they don't have as many members now. Unions are a waning influence because we don't have basically our industrial backbone, which has been a union stronghold, has gone away. I mean, it's broke.
Yeah. Anyway. Yeah, they got tricked into voting against their own interests. I heard something interesting the other day about Clinton, and it went like that he was actually the most evil president. He did, not only did he bring in NAFTA, he brought in the, he repealed the Glass-Steagall Act.
Yep.
And to make it a hat trick, he repealed the limitations on media ownership. So, I mean, three of the most devastating, yep, crippling acts, all under this slimy little fella, you know.
Yep. And now we got his slimy little wife wanting to get in there and have another 8 years to ruin the country.
Yeah.
Oh boy!
I mean, like you say, well, Donald Trump. I mean, as bad as he is, I mean, we just gotta hope.
Well, that's why. You know what? I if people want to vote for Trump, then that's, you know what? I don't trust him.
Well, it'd be more interesting, I think, anyway.
Well, it would be interesting. I guess where I'm at right now, like just the other day, I saw him say, enhanced interrogation is something that he supports, and by the way, it works. It's just things like that, you know what? Maybe you should have kept your mouth shut, because every single time he opens his trap and says something like that, it makes me feel like, how can I, as a decent American person — I think I'm decent, I try to be, I'm not perfect, but I try to be a decent person — and as I listen to this, how can I support him in good conscience? How can I vote for somebody who's advocating torture? This whole, enhanced interrogation thing, it's just a nice word for torture. And saying that it works, if somebody is putting a clamp on you, clamping your hand down, squeezing you, or putting, jumper cables on your testicles — pardon my graphic, but hey, these are things that have been done in certain countries, and why should we think that they're stopping at waterboarding, for instance, when we know there's classified CIA stuff that we've never seen? How do we know what they're doing? The point is that I have every reason to believe they're doing that and a whole lot more. If somebody's got these things on you and they're shocking you to death, you'll say anything to make the pain stop. So to suggest that it works, all I can say is scumbag.
Yeah. Well,
anyway.
I agree with you 100%. I mean, I've always hated him from a long time ago when I was seeing him up in New York. I don't plan on voting for him because I live in a state where it's not going to make any difference. But I'm just —
I'm not beating up. Understand me. Understand me. I'm not beating up on people that will vote for him. Because I can see myself, I was tempted. I look at this and I look at how bad Hillary is, how evil this woman is, and I think, dear God, anything but her. So, at this point in time, do pray about it. Pray about it. And ask God to direct you, and do as you feel guided. That's all I can really say about it. But Hey, listen, Ken, I appreciate your call. Thank you so much. Got a few other things I want to cover here before we run out of time.
Thanks.
But God bless you, sir. Thank you very much for the call. All right, folks. I think I'm going to... I got some other free trade stuff that I was going to cover, and I think I'll just let that ride. I'll put it in the show notes. You have the top U.S. trade official saying that rejecting the TPP would hand China the keys to the castle on globalization. And all I got to say to that is that it's globalization that is the problem, and they've always done this. They engineer a crisis, in this case, the gutting of our economy, through the facility of free trade, and then they turn around and give you the solution, their solution, in true Hegelian dialectic type of form, which is more of the same, which is more of their agenda. So we got to pass more free trade agreements to deal with the problem of China becoming more powerful because of what? Because of the free trade agreements. Moving along here, we were talking earlier, we talked before about the so-called Black Lives Matter bullcrap. Now we have the new Black Panthers leader, not to be confused with the original Black Panthers, but the new Black Panther leader talking about migrating to the southern states, five southern states, and forming their own country. Yeah, I don't see that happening, especially when you consider some of the southern states you're talking about. Louisiana, Mississippi, South Carolina, Alabama, and Georgia. But they claim that they want to take over those states. Yeah, good luck with that. No, it ain't going to happen. But this is all cultural Marxism. This is all being engineered from on high to keep you folks fighting amongst each other. Because they don't, as long as we're fighting with each other, we'll never realize who the real enemy is. Accuracy in media. By the way, this all of this Black Lives Matter stuff, I've been doing a little digging because I've long suspected it was just Soros, but really, there's a lot more involved here than Soros as far as the funding of these organizations. And Accuracy in Media did a lot of investigative journalism on this piece. James Simpson says the Black Lives Matter movement cast itself as a spontaneous uprising born of inner city frustration, but is in fact the latest and most dangerous face of a web of well-funded communist / socialist organizations. Now, what have we been saying here on the show? We've been saying that this is nothing short of cultural Marxism. This is a deconstructing of society to create the chaos so that they can come in and create their order. They say it's Black Lives Matter's agitation has provoked police killings and other violence, lawlessness, and unrest in minority communities throughout the U.S. Well, first of all, I have a problem with this term minority community, because more and more white people are becoming the minority in our nation. I don't buy this whole term minority anymore. Everywhere I turn, I see people who are other than whites. So who's the minority? And I've said it last a couple of weeks ago, and I'll say it again. You want to get rid of racism, you need to get rid of all racism. You need to quit being racist if you want to do away with racism. The problem is now we have certain races that are acceptable and certain race that isn't acceptable. And I'm telling you right now, ladies and gentlemen, white people had better find their voice and speak up in their defense. Otherwise, we're going to have a target painted on us. We already do have a target painted on us. We need to promote real harmony, but these groups, and I, you know what, gives me great satisfaction, and it really uplifts me, because I see on YouTube there's a lot of black folks that are speaking out against this Black Lives Matter movement. And God bless you for seeing through the BS. God bless you for thinking instead of being drawn into an emotional debate where it reminds me of Orwell's 1984 and the 2 minutes hate. You know, where you see the evil person on the screen and you're just going to, it's your fault. You know, and they hate and they throw a fit. And I mean, this is how people are being manipulated today. But anyway, skipping down here on this, they talk about leftist origins. They said exploiting blacks to promote Marxist revolution is an old tactic. The late Gary Grathwall, former FBI informant in the Weather Underground, understood from personal experience how white communists exploited blacks and other minority groups. He said the Weather Underground terrorist Bill Ayers and Bernadine Dorn regarded Barack Obama, whose political career they sponsored, as a tool, a puppet, to use against white America. Obama's legacy at home will certainly include more racial division. Black Lives Matter launched in 2013 with a Twitter hashtag Black Lives Matter after a neighborhood watchman, George Zimmerman, was acquitted in the Trayvon Martin killing. Radical left activists Alicia Garza, Patrice Cullors, and Opal Tometi claim credit for the slogan and the hashtag. Following the Michael Brown shooting in August of 2014, Dream Defenders, an organization led by Working Families Party, or ACORN, activist and Occupy Wall Street anarchist Nalini Stamp popularized the phrase, "Hands up, don't shoot," which has since become Black Lives Matter's widely recognized slogan. Garza, Cullors, and Tometi all work for front groups of the Freedom Road Socialist Organization, or the FRSO. Freedom Road Socialist Organization, listeners, one of the four largest radical left organizations in the country. The others are the Communist Party USA, the Democratic Socialists of America, or DSA. You know, Bernie Sanders said he was a Democratic Socialist, didn't he? Anyway, I digress. But the Democratic Socialists of America are tied into this. And the Committees of Correspondence for Democracy and Socialism, CCDS. Nalini Stamp's ACORN, now rebranded under a variety of different names, works with all four organizations, and Dream Defenders is backed by Secret Employees of International Union, or the CEIU, the ACLU, the Southern Poverty Law Center, and others. FRSO is hereditary, descendant of the New Communist Movement, listeners. That's another organization that's tied in with the FRSO, which is, again, the Freedom Road Socialist Organization, which was inspired by Mao and the many communist revolutions throughout the world in the 1960s and 70s. The FRSO split into two separate groups in 1999, FRSO/Fight Back and FRSO/OSCL, which is Freedom Road Socialist Organization, and something in Spanish, it looks like. Anyway, Black Lives Matter and its founders are allied with the latter group. Did you hear that? Black Lives Matter and its founders are allied with socialist/communist organizations. Future references to FRSO in this article refer to the latter group of the Freedom Road Socialist Organization. Anyway, the FRSO is comprised of dozens of groups. The radical left model is based on alliances of many organizations that are working on separate issues but dedicated ultimately to the same thing, overthrowing our society in order to replace it with a hardcore socialist or communist one. The goal is to present the appearance of a formidable mass of organizations. Some are large, but many are a little more than a website or a Facebook page. When necessary, they can all come together to promote the cause du jour. The deaths of Trayvon Martin, Michael Brown, and others were mere pretexts for socialist agitation. And we've talked again. I come back to that book, that treatise, called "And Not a Shot Is Fired." This is how they've accomplished it in other parts of the world. They popularize themes and memes and drive the pressure from below, even as they're pushing from above. Slogans, they mentioned that in there. I got to revisit that later on. But anyway, it says, as Stamp has said, we are actually trying to change the capitalist system we have today because it's not working for any of us. So what do they want to do? Change it to a communist system, which will work for us? Okay, where's the precedent for that ever happening? All I see is blood running in the streets from a communist system. And granted, yeah, blood runs in the streets sometimes here in America, but you ain't seen nothing yet, baby. You haven't seen anything yet. In communist countries, you keep your mouth shut, or you get that knock on the door. You don't dare speak out. You don't dare say anything. Or you just simply disappear. You'll be here one day, and in true Orwellian fashion, you've never existed. Suddenly, the memory hole is something you fall down. FRSO membership is disproportionately represented, this socialist organization, by blacks, homosexuals, they say gays, but I say homosexuals, and women. And self-consciously emphasizes these issues. Garza, who penned a herstory, herstory, because, you know, history, well, that's sexist, and we can't have that. You know, herstory of BLM, Black Lives Matter, is a quote-unquote queer black veteran activist involved in numerous FRSO organizations. Her resume includes Special Lives, Special Projects Director of National Domestic Workers Alliance, the Executive Director of People Organized to Win Employment Rights, Board Member, School of Unity and Liberation, and 2011 Board Chair, Right to the City Alliance. She describes herself as a working-class, queer, black woman. She claims the country killed her father, a drug addict. At a 2015 Netroots Nation conference, Colors led chants shouting, "If I die in public police custody, burn everything down. Rise the F up." That is the only way the MFers like you will listen. Very sweet woman, by the way. Anyway, skipping down here. So, you know, I'll tell you what. I'll put this whole thing in the show notes because time is quickly getting away from us. But I think it's important to know who's behind these organizations, the funding involved. I'm going to take the bottom of the hour break and we'll continue. I got a bunch of other stuff to cover in the last half hour of the show. Don't go away. All right, we're back. This is Govern America. GovernAmerica.com is the website. That's www.governamerica.com. As we have a bunch of news on there constantly being updated, and so check it out on a daily basis. As we continue on, we were talking a little bit about the Black Lives Matter. I don't want to spend too long on this because we have other things to talk about as well. But revisiting Jan Kozak's book, And Not a Shot is Fired. This is, again, explains how a free government was actually transformed into a totalitarian dictatorship. The Soviet army wasn't needed to subdue Czechoslovakia in 1948. Kozak notes, because at the time, the Czechoslovak people had already unknowingly chosen the path to dictatorship. And so what he's doing here, he's talking about how he and his co-conspirators manipulated the Czechoslovakian people and devoting themselves into slavery by using what he called the pressure from above and pressure from below. I refer to this because it's so clear to me. So clear. It's called And Not a Shot is Fired, Jan Kozak, K-O-Z-A-K. Because it's so clear, this is the strategy that's been used over and over again, and it's being used to create the Marxist destabilization of our country right now. They're using the same tactics right now. He talks in here at page 22. Use of national mass organizations. Of quite exceptional importance was the origin of the United Revolutionary Trade Union Movement, ROH, as a class and socialist organization, consolidated the unity of the workers' class. It enhanced its revolutionary strength and weight, and under the leadership of the Communist Party, it used strength most effectively for the fortification of the people's democratic power and for the advancement of the socialist revolution. Keep in mind, they call us a democracy. What is a democracy? It means that if the majority says something, then whatever it is the rule of the day. Never mind the Constitution. Never mind anything else. Never mind basic principle. If the mob says it, then that's the way it is. And never mind the fact that the mob can be manipulated into doing anything you want, especially today when the other side has control of the establishment media. The mob can be easily manipulated in a democracy. So other means for influencing and guiding working masses were in particular the United Association of Czech Peasantry, the Association of Liberated Political Prisoners, the Associated Friends of the Soviet Union, the CS Youth Federation, etc. A great help for guidance and organization of the revolutionary fight of the peasants were the so-called Peasants' Commissions, whose members could be only farmhands, tenant farmers, and small and medium farmers from the ranks of applicants for land. This network of broad national mass organizations was used by the communists for the popularization of their policy and slogans. Slogans, you know, Black Lives Matter. That's a slogan, isn't it? And for engendering and organizing the initiative of the masses and for using various forms and actions of the pressure from below for the purpose of implementing that policy. They talk about use of protests, demonstrations, and strikes. We have those going on here in the United States, don't we, right now? Protests, demonstrations, and strikes? Everywhere you turn, you see protests, demonstrations, and strikes, don't you? They say the second experience gained in the struggle from below is the many-sided use of the proper forms of pressure exerted from the popular masses. In other words, democracy, ladies and gentlemen. These forms corresponded to the complicated class situation in the conditions prevailing under the people's democratic order. When the workers' class assumed power, but the bourgeoisie still kept part of the power. One of the side, all the old proven forms of the struggle of the popular masses were employed, the forms which were in keeping with the revolutionary initiative and determination of the workers that and matched the degree of resistance shown by the bourgeoisie, calling of protest meetings, passing of resolutions, sending of delegations, organizing mass demonstrations. Hello, mass demonstrations. And also, eventually, using strikes, including general strikes, when finally the open political clash with the bourgeoisie was brought about in February 1948. The strength and striking power of the individual actions of the pressure from below were constantly increased as need arose and were safeguarded by exceptional organizational forms. Anyway, I'm not going to read any more of this because the whole thing is rich. I talk in here about confiscation of private land and a whole lot of other stuff. It's not a very big booklet, but man, is it chock full of what's happening today. And this is the point, ladies and gentlemen. Everything you're seeing in our society today is an extension of cultural Marxism or economic Marxism. It's going on full-blown, and yeah, there is corporatocracy. And I realize, but what we're having here is a blending of totalitarian systems, which ultimately is going to accomplish the enslavement of everyone if they get their way. But being aware of it, being aware of the tactic, not being manipulated into joining these types of things, because all it is, it's designed to deconstruct society and create chaos. To create chaos. And that's the same thing with the transgender bullcrap. Same thing. It's designed to create chaos. I've said it before. How can you as a society solve your problems, your large problems as of society when you can't figure out what restroom to use, for heaven's sake? It's insane. It really is insane. Anyway, getting back to this accuracy in media article real quick, and then I want to move on to other things. They talking here about who's funding the funding, and that's really what I wanted to get back to. 2013 revenues of the NDWA were $5.5 million. Their board includes two members of CASA de Maryland, the illegal version of ACORN. CASA also received a grant from NDWA in 2013, as did the Radical Left Institute for Policy Studies. These are organizations tied to this whole Black Lives Matter thing. NDWA receives funding from the following organizations. Ben & Jerry's, $30,000. By the way, ladies and gentlemen, you might consider boycotting these companies, the ones that you can, like Ben & Jerry's. There's other places to get ice cream if you want it. These are foundations. I don't know how well tied to the actual foundations that the actual corporations that the foundations are. Like, for instance, the Ford Foundation, I don't know that they're tied at all to the Ford Motor Company anymore. But anyway, that's another one, $1,910,000 from the Ford Foundation. Kellogg, $250,000. Margaret Casey, $450,000. Nathan Cummings, $500,000. Oak, $489,500. Rockefeller Foundation, $134,000. These are organizations that are funding these Black Lives Matter groups. Soros, of course, everybody would expect him. His funds, $1,344,846. Cerdna, $235,000, and other, it says $777,550 for a total of $6.1 million. 2013 revenues were $456,000 for Garza, including $92,173 in government grants. Government grants, listeners. There is also an organization, Power. That's the one I was just mentioning, Power. Power, this Power organization, evolved from the now-defunct communist group STORM, which stands for Standing Together to Organize a Revolutionary Movement. Obama's former Green Jobs czar, the self-described communist Van Jones, served on STORM's board of directors. There's the RTTC. 2013 revenues were $248,190. There's a breakdown for all of these organizations, and we just don't have time to go through them all. But this article will be in the show notes as well. I encourage you to go through there and look at this. And I'll try to put a link also to the book, And Not a Shot is Fired. I think you can get it off of Amazon. But people need to have this book distributed. I've referred to it often on the show because I think it's just so monumental in understanding the tactics involved from the standpoint of the people that did it. This is not political theory. This is their own words, what they say, how they did it. They're bragging, essentially. All right. Now, one other thing about the racial stuff. Now we have apparently a website was launched which establishes a quote-unquote marketplace whereby white people can pay reparations to quote-unquote people of color for their years of oppression, ladies and gentlemen. The site was started by a woman named Natasha Marin, a conceptual artist who says that the website began as a social media experiment on Facebook in July 2016. The about page of the website clarifies how people should utilize the site. She says, I invite people of color to ask for what we need to feel better, to be happier, to be more productive by posting in this space. These may be both material and immaterial requests. I invite people who identify as white. That's what she says. I invite people who identify as white to offer services or contributions to people of color in need of time, energy, substantive care, and support. So there you go, ladies and gentlemen. The victimhood is well in full bloom. the downtrodden people of color need to be supported by the people who identify as white. Maybe that's my problem, is identify as white. If I identify as people as a person of color, because, you know, white is a color. I wonder if I can get a free check. I wonder if I can post on here about my needs, things I want. And they use examples. She uses examples. A person of color says, I need a massage this week. And in this imaginary scenario, a white person responds by posting a Groupon with a code for a redemption. Another example, a person of color says, I need therapy. I can spend $10 a session. White person responds, post contact information to a therapist who they made arrangements with. Person of color says, I need groceries. White person number three says, I'll get them for you. Private message me and I'll send an Amazon Fresh or Safeway delivery. You just pick out what you want. I have a $200 limit. Another example, person of color says, I'm too upset to make dinner. Too upset, listeners, to make dinner. I live in Seattle. White person number four says, come over to my house for dinner. Bring a friend if you like. Private message me and I'll send you the address. Or can I order delivery for you? What kind of food do you like? Can you believe this? The gall? The audacity? Unbelievable. Another example. Person of color says, I need a quiet place to work on. Fill in the blank. White person number five says, hey, I have an office, a spare room, a house that will be unoccupied on the following dates. Would you like to use that space? I can send pictures. Oh, yeah, this is realistic. Great way to be burglarized, by the way. Ah, oh, man. Ah, oh, jeez. This is too much. That's from Zero Hedge. I'll put that in the show notes. All right. I wanted to get this in today. In the waning moments of the broadcast, we have a society that's on drugs. And hey, you know what? Given everything we've talked about, it's all I can do to go prevent taking some myself, okay? So I get it. People need happiness, and they're seeking it amongst the pharmaceuticals. It's easy to be depressed. But we have over half the population now, well, 70 million Americans anyway, on mind-altering drugs like opioids and antidepressants, ladies and gentlemen. And the thing is there are a lot of other drugs that aren't necessarily supposed to be happy drugs, but they affect moods too. Even to the point where now the fish are growing two sets of genitalia in the rivers because people are peeing out this stuff in the toilets, and it's causing the fish to have deformities. This is how bad it's gotten. And by the way, if the fish are confused about their gender, what does that say about what the drugs are doing to you? Could this be where some of that is coming from? Just saying. But anyway, there is a video which I want to share with you, because this is just, to me, absolutely, well, it just demonstrates. It's another case of life imitating art, or art imitating life, actually. Microsoft has come out with a video called We Happy Few. And actually, this was revealed by Joshua Krause over there at the Daily Sheeple. We have this article, his article, up on the website right now. What would it look like if our society carries on with this path of everybody being drugged up for too long? What if we really were forced to undergo pharmacological-induced obedience? You see, we got the new Freedom Initiative on mental health, which George W. Bush was pushing. We've got forced vaccinations today. And that's something that continues to be a bigger and bigger issue all along. So this is not really that big of a stretch when they're literally mining for mental defects. And who is mentally defective? anybody that doesn't fit into their program. When we have psychiatrists literally voting mental illness into existence, as they do with the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual on Mental Health, they literally meet and decide, okay, these characteristics, these human behaviors, these patterns of thinking, which every one of us have some of these, because it's what makes us all unique. But they get together and decide this is going to be a mental illness, and they vote on it. And if the vote goes through, it becomes a new mental illness. It's put in the book, which opens the door wide for the pharmaceutical companies then to work in tandem with them and say, we need a drug for this. Well, if you've got mental illness and your kid goes to school and fills out a survey, which asks them, well, are you depressed? Well, yeah, I'm depressed. Everybody's depressed at certain points. So, yeah, I'll check the yes box on that. Well, do you get angry? Well, yeah, I get angry too. Well, you must have a disorder there. And you just go down the list. All of a sudden, next thing you know, it's mandatory. That kid has to take medicine. That kid has, you know, when I was growing up, we had hyperactivity. I had a cousin. It was very hyperactive. And he was kind of hard to control. He was a really a handful. Nowadays, he would have been on drugs. He's turned out to be a very well-rounded, well-adjusted individual. Very responsible. But had he been around growing up in today's world, his brain would have been damaged by pharmacological concoctions. And this is the problem, ladies and gentlemen. So they say in this article, and I don't want to talk us out of time here, what if we were really forced to undergo pharmacologically induced obedience? It's been written about in books and seen in movies, but until recently, no one had ever tried to portray that kind of dystopian future in a video game. Now, who is doing this? Who would try to portray this in a video game? Well, none other than Microsoft, ladies and gentlemen. You know, Microsoft, the same guys that were founded by this piece of work.
We've got population. Now, if we do a really great job on new vaccines, healthcare, reproductive health services, we could lower that by perhaps 10 or 15%.
Yeah, that guy. Hey, let's use drugs, let's use vaccinations to reduce those evil, pesky people. We need to get the population down. So now we have this video game put out by his company called We Happy Few, ladies and gentlemen. We Happy Few. It's a new first-person survival horror game that places you in the fictional town of Wellington Wells, which is located in an alternative timeline in 1960s Britain. The citizens of the town, who all wear creepy clown makeup, go figure, are forced to take a mind-altering drug called Joy. Oh, man. And those who don't take their Joy are deemed downers. Downers, of course, are either force-fed their pills, beaten, or killed by strung-out mobs, ostracized into ghettos. This is the vision of the future, ladies and gentlemen, courtesy of Microsoft. And he goes on to say, as the player, you get to see the effects of the drug firsthand. Now, Joy, the drug, forces you to see the world with rose-colored glasses, as everything appears brilliant and colorful, and not a thing in the world seems wrong. This makes everyone blissfully unaware of the fact that this dystopian society is falling apart and faces severe shortages of food and joy pills. You play as Arthur Hastings, whose day job is to go through old newspaper articles and redact unhappy stories, very much the same way the Ministry of Truth operated in his book 1984, or in the Orwell book 1984. That's what it reminded me of as well, seeing this.
After seeing an old article that reminds him of his deceased brother, Arthur becomes distraught and can't bring himself to take his quote-unquote joy pills any longer. Slowly, the drug wears off, and he begins to see how nightmarish the world really is. So as I said, or as Joshua said here, everything is being viewed from the first person through this guy's eyes. He's redacting news articles, and he takes out his antidepressant, you know, his joy pills, and says, you know, I should probably take my joy, but then decides against it. Then at that point, a woman comes in and scolds him. So I'm going to play a little bit from this video game, ladies and gentlemen. Coming to a Child Near You.
Oh, heavens no.
I should just take my joy, shouldn't I?
What have you been up to? No one's seen you for hours.
Oh, nose to the grindstone, you know.
Then why haven't I heard a single whoosh through the door since 10 o'clock? Did you forget we're having Deirdre's birthday party? Oh. We've got a pinata.
Right. Brilliant. Of course.
Have you forgotten your joy?
Of course not. Snug as a bug on a drug.
Well, come on then. Finish up.
Just have a few more pages. I know you're very busy.
Then don't take too long to finish.
Okay, so he proceeds to wander around the building without taking his joy. Seeing the world without the benefit of his joy, he's noticing the place is a mess, walks past a window where one of the women there are being beaten by a man, and when they notice him watching, the blinds are closed. Then he makes his way down the room where the celebration, quote-unquote, is taking place.
There you are. You nearly missed the pinata. It's the most adorable Spanish custom. Uncle Jack did a whole show about it. You smash it until all the candy comes out. Come on, hit it! Hit it! Hit it!
Give it a whack!
Hit it!
Hit it!
Okay, now he hits the pinata. The pinata breaks open. Instead of candy, it's blood, ladies and gentlemen. Blood comes out of the pinata. And everybody in the room, except for him, starts immediately licking the blood up like it's candy. He almost throws up. That's what you heard there.
You are off your joy. Take one of mine. Oh, my Lord. He's a downer. Ah! Call security. We've got a downer.
Okay, this is the vision of the future as envisioned by Microsoft, ladies and gentlemen. Pinata candy, blood, cannibalism, forced drugging. This is all a Microsoft production, ladies and gentlemen. Don't you just love these revolutionaries? All right, we got a caller on the line. Only have about a minute left. Who do we have?
This is Mr. X from Florida.
Hey, how you doing there?
Good. You know, I think before the show, you could get Frank to give you a giant joy suppository, and maybe your show would be more uplifting. What do you
think? I'm sorry, it's not uplifting. I hate to be the bearer of bad news. Everybody's going to be wanting to go take their joy now.
What a way to end your show.
Oh, boy.
Boy, oh, boy, oh, boy.
What a kicker.
Never ceases to amaze me. Wonderful. Just wonderful. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you, and I'm sorry we ran out of time. Hopefully next week we can have you back talk, you know, and then actually say something. Cause
I got to think about this for a whole week now, the joy suppository. Okay, have a good one.
Thanks a lot, Harvey. God bless. All right, folks, that's about it. That's all the time we have. Oh, boy. Go out and win the nation back, win hearts and minds, and try to keep your sanity in this insane world. Pray for this republic. Do what you can to restore it. And we'll talk to you again next week. Thanks for being with us and staying with us through the ups and downs and the technical problems, which we hope and pray will be fixed by next week. God bless you, and we'll talk to you then. Bye-bye.